Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness. I'm your host, Ant-Man, and today I'm joined by our resident shaman, Heather Heaton. Delighted to have you back on the show, Heather. How are you?
Hello, Ant. Great, thank you. Yes, great to be back again.
Brilliant. So if any of our listeners want to know more about you, I'll just share your contact details. So your website is www.heatherheaton.org, and that's HEATHERHEATON. Is that correct?
Yes.
Excellent. And they can find you on Facebook. Your business page is Spiritual Shamanka, I believe. Is that correct?
That's the one.
Excellent.
You have it.
Excellent.
In one.
And they can message you on there, and I believe that when you do your workshops there, they're uploaded on there, the information about them aren't there. And
yes, excellent. Yes. And people can also send in questions if they have any queries on any of these subjects.
Yeah.
By all means do.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of Discerning Consciousness, our Facebook page is Discerning Consciousness, funnily enough. And people can message us on there if you have any queries. And as Heather said, if on any specific subject we talk about on the show, they can message us with any questions they might have or suggestions for future shows. Of course, we're always open to new ideas. So anyway, that's the promo bit over with.
Done.
Done. So today what we're talking about, it's a bit of a shift for Discerning Consciousness, really. We're going to talk about the paranormal. So I know it's an area that you're very interested in, Heather. So that's why I thought I'd get you in, get an expert in to talk about it. But as always with Discerning Consciousness, we don't assume that people, you know, have lots of background knowledge. I mean, you know, because in the esoteric field, we all have our favourite hobby horses, don't we? And we will know about one area, but not about another. So I think it'd be interesting for our listeners if we start with a basic explanation of what the word actual paranormal means.
I've always understood it, Ant, as being para, being alongside normal.
Okay.
So if we say our normal awareness of everyday life and what happens within it, it's almost suggesting that there is another everyday existence that trundles along right alongside our normal conscious and awareness existence.
Right, okay.
Is that a mouthful or is that
no, that's,
a,
is that's that sound, a very that's a very good explanation, which speaks to the word para. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that is something that's running alongside the normal normal course of events in the material plane, if you will.
Yes. Yeah.
So have you ever personally had any experience in your own life of how these two spaces run alongside one another?
Oh, gosh, yes. This is what started my interest, I should imagine, a long time ago.
That's good, because another question I was going to ask you is where your original interest in the paranormal began.
Right, were you?
So that's very handy.
Okay, well, let's go for it then.
Yeah.
Yes, my interest began when I was very much younger, when I realised that other things were happening.
Sure.
In my awareness.
Yeah.
That I couldn't really speak about because it you can't produce the words for it. Mm. I was aware of people's thinking. Mm. I was aware of people's thinking. So, and that developed to an awareness of psychic,
right,
shall we say.
Yeah.
So that starts that off with that curiosity, which takes you into conversations as you get older with people talking about what we now call paranormal activity or involvement, which it is like people that have died or the dead or spirits that have some sort of connection or interaction with alive human beings or people, human beings that are still alive, shall I say, within body. I had an experience, I would say, that was with my grandmother. There were several times my grandmother walked alongside of me and I'd have conversations with her.
Yeah.
But many, many times I said to myself after the conversations, oh, I'm mad, I'm nuts, that didn't really happen.
Which is quite common, of course.
Yeah, she died. I was very, very close to her and she died when I was seven.
Right.
She passed over suddenly when I was seven. Mm. These conversations I took then to be emotional comfort, right. Psychological emotional comfort, rather right. than anything.
You mean you took comfort from them?
I presumed that yeah. I was taking comfort from these little conversations sure. because they were happening in my head, although they seemed real at the time.
So that was your understanding?
That they were happening in my head, they were real, that I was really having a real conversation with my grandmother who had died, mm. and that after those episodes went away, or when I passed by those episodes, mm. I would have to say to myself, oh, they were just comfort zones. They mm. were psychological comfort zones because I missed her greatly. Mm. So, and it wasn't until I went to one of the spiritual churches yeah. one day when there was a lady stood on the podium giving readings. She came to somebody before me, a young lad who was very, very psychic, even though he was very young. And his parents understood him. But then following that, she said, I must come to this young lady here. Her grandmother's here to talk to her. And told me then about the conversations that I'd had with my grandmother that I thought was only in my head.
Right.
And it was quite a shock. I had other members of the family sitting with us.
And what sort of age were you when that took place? Do you
in my 20s.
All right, okay.
In my 20s that happened. And said that she stayed with me from when she died because she knew I needed her. And there were a couple of occasions where I found myself prior to being to this reading from yeah. this medium that was up on the podium on the stage.
Yeah.
I'd had a couple of incidences where I suddenly found myself in danger.
Yeah.
And weird things happened that took me out of the danger.
So you're talking
and
about...
And I knew it was hard.
Was it inexplicable events that normal science couldn't explain?
Totally inexplicable. Very, very strange things happen and took me out of danger zone. And this is what was spoken about by the medium at that time. So that was the first moment I knew that I'd truly had conversations with somebody in the spirit world who I was aware of mm. and who was aware of me. Mm. It suddenly reality hit that this other space existed and mm. it was real and I'd been communicating with it. I was also told that she would very much like to go into the light. She stayed away from the light and stayed near me yeah. to support me and help me. Sure. And if I was ready to let her go, she could go into the light. And I did do this at a later date.
Is that a mini ceremony that you went through?
I just sat quietly, believe it, because nobody taught me anything.
I've made it more grand than it was. That's the tendency, isn't there, in the spiritual field, for when we carry out events like that, or when we want to, say, a clearing, or we want to cut an attachment, or whatever it might be, sometimes, quite often I should say, it is just a case of sitting down and centering. It's not that there's no grand ceremony required, is there?
We're all capable of these things.
Yeah.
Mostly the population has forgotten. Mm. People involved in the esoteric world and the paranormal world, I think they have an insight to the fact that we all have capabilities mm. beyond that of simplistic humanness mm. and intellect.
Yeah.
We have abilities well beyond that, which of course comes into the quantum physics realm. Mm. I do believe, for instance, if I can go on to like the subject of possession.
Okay, yeah.
I believe that if somebody has got an attachment, that is a spirit being that's not gone to the light, that's attaching itself to a human being through comfort or a need for the energy or for help or support or a dominance even. There's different reasons why spirits would do this who had not gone through the process of what we call going to the light. Therefore, they are stuck very, very closely to the human vibration realm. It's very, very likely that if it's somebody who, a spirit person who is benign, shall I say, there's no great threat, no great, and attach themselves, then the human being, even without training, can sit there down, concentrate, and release that person and encourage them to go to the light without any great, as you say, ceremony or ritual.
Or Hollywood
it really
style.
Is a, yeah, yeah, it really is a heartfelt thing. Of course, it's not so easy if there's an attachment that is as not as benign as that.
Well, you mean like a malevolent?
Yeah, something more... more unpleasant, shall we say, or grasping.
So, Heather, would you say, because I know obviously in your work as a shamanic healer and counsellor, you've obviously had clients who've had attachments. Would you say that most attachments are benign then? I think you alluded to that.
Most, oh gosh, that's a loaded question.
It is a bit, isn't it? Yeah.
It is really. Mm. Most.
'Cause I think the fantasy part of, you know, when you hear about attachments, is all in the main that they're malevolent and they're having this really awful effect on the human being and they're destroying their life. And
Well, that's what sells film time, video time, magazine time. The drama is the most interesting. So of course it sells space, doesn't it, in the media and the different type areas of media. So there is a whole range, there's a massive range that I think that we don't always get on the media. And we don't always get when people talk about an event that happened to a relative of theirs or or an event that happens to them. I think the events that are discussed are the dramatic ones rather than...
So we hear about them more.
Yeah, so there are slightly quieter ones and more benign effects within... property within land, upon land, or with around human beings.
I know there's a point that I'm interested to find out, and I'm sure our listeners are as well. In your role as a shamanic practitioner and counselor, how do you, when you have a client that comes to you, how do you discern between, how do you in essence work out if they have got an attachment or whether they actually have a psychological issue or baggage and they're wanting to label that as, oh, I've got an attachment, you know, to try and escape from actually having to heal themselves. Obviously you've got to discern that, haven't you?
Yes.
That must be quite difficult.
I'm careful.
Yeah, it's very much where you've got to walk an ethical tightrope, haven't you?
Yes, very, very careful. I would probably have a one-to-one session, as in counselling, interviewing, even doing shamanic treatments for alleviating certain... past traumas, for instance. Before I come to a conclusion that there may be an attachment there.
So you have to follow through a set process before you can reach that conclusion.
Well, it depends on the individual
on the
that it's happening to and what type. But it's, I think it's very easy for somebody who has certain symptoms or certain lifestyles that are dramatic to presume the worst. I have people come to me and say they've been cursed.
Yes.
As well as, I think I have an attachment.
Or they've been hexed.
Hexed is a very popular word.
Back to Hollywood again.
Well, yes, but you see, you know, there is, if you can't figure out something in your life and you can't seem to control it, and it's detrimental to your life, it's dramatic, it's negatives in your life, you look for an answer. And sometimes people will come up with an answer from the paranormal,
sure,
rather than from life skills, sure, shall we say.
Can I check with you, Heather? Do you think that's because people have a tendency to catastrophize things? And one way which they can catastrophize things, I think I said that right, is
it's a good
is,
word.
Yeah, is to place it in the realm of being the paranormal, you know, and in that way they can escape from almost owning it.
I think it sums it up. If there's a number of things going on in somebody's life that seems detrimental to their happiness or their well-being, it seems to sum it up. My experience is that a lot of people want to find a simple solution. So a simple diagnosis and then a simple solution.
The golden bullet.
Well, yes, though it doesn't feel like anything golden if it feels like it's an attachment or a hex, but, or a curse. But it sums it up and it directs it into a simplistic answer. So therefore we can possibly go to the right person and find a simplistic solution.
A prescriptive cure, yeah.
Yes, and it aims towards a cure. Understandably, because it's like, I can't think of any answers. I can't think of why this is going. So we see a lot of films on television. There's a lot of media stuff. So that tends to come forward as an answer. So it's my job, and for people that do the work I do, to what we call track, investigate into all of what's going on in their lives, what's going on in their background, all of the symptoms that they've been suffering or they've been dealing with, and begin to see the wood for the trees to get to a place of diagnosis. I think is a gradual process. It's not a fast one.
No.
So it's usually dealing with one area or one, I would call it layers of happenings and events. So we're looking at probably early life healings when dramas and sadnesses have taken place. And once they've been healed, or putting in the progress of healing. And then we can look at life coaching, life coaching or mentoring to see what sort of areas in their life could be turned around by looking at them more positively. Little by little, as we clear the layers, we begin to see what's left. And if there is an attachment, what's left usually becomes very clear. But it's taking away all of the other stuff. Now, if there is nothing left, there isn't an attachment. Does that answer it?
It does, because it sounds like it's quite an ethical process that you go through, really.
Absolutely. It's quite serious. I think it's very unhealthy to jump at naming an attachment that is a spiritual, something from the spirit world clinging to a human being and destroying their lives or their health. To jump at that too quickly could easily be a real wrong diagnosis and set up a rather unhealthy psychology. Or belief system. So I think it's very ethical to go at it carefully when we're dealing with that. Most people, I do find there isn't an attachment. There is life skills, life coaching.
Far less glamorous.
And dramas and traumas from the past that need looking at.
That's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. If we bring back to the basis of the episode and this word paranormal, you can't think of paranormal this day and age without thinking of paranormal investigations, of course. This is a phrase, there's a series of programs, obviously we won't give them free promotion, but it's very popular. Am I right in thinking, Heather, that you have some experience of this aspect of the paranormal? Is that correct?
Yes, well, at the moment we have a group of people involved in doing investigations in that way. We have a man that has the technical equipment and the technical know-how called, I can't remember his title.
All right.
And I believe he has a professional title, so I'm not going to say his proper name. But anyway, the Technoman, I like to call him.
That's a good title.
And then we have three psychics. Mm-hmm. Now, each psychic has a different way of reading what's going on. So we usually get different levels of sensing and reading of what's going on. For instance, one of them's very clairvoyant and very conscious of any spirit that might be walking around. So the other ones pick up on storylines, though. So they'll pick up on energy systems that are going around and stories that have got left in a place and stored. Three ladies, they are. They're very good at their jobs. I am the healer. So when we pick up on activity that needs healing, then I conduct the healing that needs to be done. So sometimes it's diffusing energy systems. Mm. Sometimes it's seeing if we can set up a communication with a spirit that happens to be creating activity. Or whether this is something sinister that needs working on in a certain way.
Mm. So you've got many different skills involved there, which obviously makes for good ghost hunting.
Yes, yeah. So we think we cover all bases on this.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know if you're able to share. Have you got any stories of any specific investigations or not, or anything that springs to mind from your past? Because I know obviously you have done things like house clearances, haven't you? I know it's a slightly different area. But is there any sort of anecdotes that springs to mind, or any stories, or were they all sort of run of the mill kind of things?
Well, I tell you what, if we go to private houses, they tend not to be the sort of thing that they want talked about. No. Following. Sure. There is diplomacy and confidentiality in here. I know we do see on a lot of people promoting paranormal investigations that it's big publicity stuff. But I feel that that's people that go out there purposely into large buildings to document what they see and what happens. We are healers. We're coming from a healer. So a lot of what we do, and it has a lot to do with people's emotions within the building. So, of course, it's very private.
I think what you're alluding to, Heather, please tell me if I've got this right, is the difference is with the sort of paranormal investigation programs you get, it's almost like that is the ghost hunting, because they're going out to find.
Whereas what you
and your team are doing is you're healing. You've been invited in by a client.
Yeah.
So it's a very different scenario. Yeah, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. A very different scenario. Yeah. That's why when we go on these, we only ask for our expenses, which is usually petrol to get there, for driving there. So it's very, very basic.
Sure.
And if it's very close, we don't charge anything at all.
Yeah.
So we do it for the sake of help and because we can, rather than this huge publicity stuff, which is great fun. I can't.
Yeah.
I must tell you, I do like watching some of it, and it's some of it's very interesting. I mean, I know some of it's put up, but some of it's genuine. But I do like it. But we like to think that we are a different a different species of the paranormal investigations.
Would you say you're more discerning?
Very consciously discerning, can I say?
That's good. It's good to hear that.
I thought so too.
Yeah,
we think so. Yes. Does that answer your question?
I wish you luck with that project. It sounds interesting.
We enjoy it.
Thank you. Just coming back again to the idea of the paranormal, I wonder if I could just pose a question, a more general question, just moving away from the whole ghost hunting, paranormal investigation side of things. Can I just ask you, why do you think it is that the paranormal and this idea of ghosts and entities, if you will, why does it capture our imagination, the public's imagination, so much?
Well, that's an interesting one. It's understood by psychologists that we're built to deal with a certain level of fear.
You mean cope with?
Psychologically, human beings are built to cope with a certain... But some psychologists seem to think that we also need a level of it. Because it's built into us, we need to use that part of us.
Well, it's part of the animal, isn't it?
It's part of the animal that we have evolved from. Absolutely. It's the primal part of us. And, of course, for a lot of us every day...
Very sedate tonight. The
nearest we get to that sort of fear is watching it on TV
bread runs out on the Tesco aisle.
Unlikely.
Because of course at discerning consciousness, you know, we wouldn't fill our bodies with all that disastrous, you know, gluten and such like.
being a little biased here. there'll be plenty of gluten to eat in the bread aisle and Tesco's from even if Tesco's go bust, which I can't see happening. Where were we?
I was just asking you a question. Why do you think it is that the paranormal and ghosts and entities and attachments and all those sorts of things, why do they capture the people's imagination? I would say even those that aren't interested, say, in the spiritual world or esotericism more widely, you talk about ghosts to them and they're interested. You know, why is it that generally it's a subject that very much captivates the public imagination?
Yeah, it was interesting you said that ghosts, even people that are scared are interested in the subject of ghosts.
Yeah.
But if you imagine yourself listening to somebody saying, oh my goodness, we came downstairs in the morning and all the kitchen cupboard doors were open. There's a fascination then, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's a fascination that something beyond what we normally can
see,
touch, grasp, control, organize. We can't do any of that. So something physical has happened, but it's out of our control completely. We don't know when it's coming up behind us. We don't know when it's coming in front of us, and it's there. So it sets up sort of like, oh my goodness, what did you do? You come downstairs in the morning, all the cupboard kitchen's like, and it's, I would say then, oh, that must have been terrifying. And you would say, well, it wasn't comfortable.
Sure.
But I was looked at it in surprise. So what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do? What did you do? What did you do next? And you go, well, I got my breakfast. What do you do? So there's this sort of out of touch and out of control. You can't touch it. You can't always see it. You can't. It's a very difficult thing to grasp. So it captures our imagination.
It's very nebulous.
That's a good word. But it captures our imagination. Almost for a lot of us, it's like as long as it's happening to somebody else and not us, we're enjoying watching and hearing, but we don't want it to happen to us.
We enjoy the stories.
And that's why it's also popular on the media, on the TV, for instance. It's so popular because it's happening to somebody else. But we can have some of the fear experience while we're listening or watching.
So we can relate to it. Yeah.
We can have some of the experience that drives up the adrenaline, but we can also feel that we can resolve it so we have some control, because it will come to the end of the film or the end of the story, or it's happening to somebody else, so we can feel then back into safe zone. We've had our thrill, and then we're back into safe zone.
I don't know if you agree with me, Heather, but isn't that the appeal of drama in general?
Yes.
You think all the great Shakespeare plays, you know,
absolutely, yes.
And you know why people love
to
go and watch films, because you know you feel like you're involved in it, but at the end of it you can just, you know, walk away and
go back into your life again,
life,
and you've resolved the issue. Because by the time, but while you're living with it, if somebody's telling the story or you're watching the story on the screen, all the time that you're beginning to live, you're living with it for a while, so it enters your life.
Sure.
But in a safe way. That's why some people can't watch the scary stuff, because they're starting to actually live it in their minds and their emotions.
Yeah, sure.
And it's too much because you can't control it then.
Yeah, yeah.
But you put it away afterwards, and so it's resolved.
Yeah.
So there is a control, and so that's why we will watch these things.
So it's very much part of our humanness again, isn't it?
And I think there are people that are saying, yes, but could I actually walk into a haunted building? Therefore there's this surge in paranormal investigation open nights, I don't know what they're called, where you can go and join, you can pay to join up,
you can go and join. I mean, even locally here in Hampshire where we live, you can go on almost like guided tours of haunted buildings. I think that's, and that is becoming increasingly popular.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it is very, because not only that, they're in groups that are organised. So, and they know that these organisers have taken groups there before and everybody's come out safe.
Yes.
And if they know everybody's come out safe, then actually it's quite tempting to go to have the real scary experience yourself, but you're safe with a group of people and an organisation that's done it with groups of people before. So it's almost like, oh, well, other people have tread that path and they've come out alive, I can think I can go and do it. So I can really say that I can go and have, and people do have ghostly and paranormal experiences on these tours. I know of a lady who was in one of the old Tudor house in Southampton. The regular tours there, I understand. I don't know who runs them. But a friend of mine went along, and as she was walking through one particular hallway, I think it was, she turned to say to some of her friend, or something, her friend turned to say to her, what did you say? And she said, I didn't say anything. She said, and they heard, twice they heard a voice speak to them, a disembodied voice speak to them, there. So that was quite an exciting experience for them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
There's the more, the element of, paranormal that we hear about in relationship to religious groups and their understanding, and obviously their opposition, are things like voodoo and witchcraft, which are obviously very easy to characterize as being negative, aren't they? Especially voodoo. But as with all things, it's the dark and light, and it comes down to what the intention is of those people who may be doing certain practices. But I mean, obviously you'll know in certain instances, there are very dark things that are going on.
Well, I always remember when I was first introduced to shamanism, I just presumed it was more of this American rubbish.
Right.
I had no idea. And it wasn't until coincidence took me down the road to experience a week in shamanism, that I was astounded by how it could guide me to understand myself, my baggage, how it could heal some, you know, past damage, and how it could take me on a road of understanding and maybe towards a level of wisdom. Seemed to be the biggest goal, which I've been trying to do ever since. And that made me understand that don't judge a book by its cover when you don't understand the cover.
Sure.
Well, my understanding of voodoo and witchcraft, there is exactly the same. Now, I do understand in shamanism that not all practitioners are practicing as the skills as well as they could. And I understand in shamanism, in some countries, there are shamans that are quite vicious and self-centered, and that the population are quite scared of them. I've come across this, whereas of course there are some wonderful wise teachers in shamanism, amazingly wise and amazing. I believe that will apply to things like voodoo and witchcraft. And I think that we've got, I'm not speaking for or against either or any of them. I can only speak for what I know. I know very little about voodoo. I've had some experience of voodoo. And witchcraft, of course, is the craft of this, the Northern Hemisphere, which now we have Wicca is a part of the craft, and become a separate religion, shall we say, or following of its own. Wicca is the very popular spin-off from the craft. I believe that there are still people practicing the ancient craft of witchcraft out there, but Wicca has spun off from it, and lots of people now practicing Wicca. But they can all be used detrimental to other people and to the public and to the land. And voodoo had practices that are quite scary, that will cause, can cause dreadful misery wherever it's created. And fear is the basis of it. And I believe that there has been witchcraft, hexing, etc. in the past. For certain groups or certain people have done detrimental things within their skills to other people. To what effect it has, I think one has to judge for themselves, because some people believe it's a psychological effect rather than a complete effect. There has been instances proven where it can have its complete effect. I know with myself, I had some hexing done to me once because I didn't understand voodoo. And it wasn't until some time later that I realised how I allowed it to happen to me. But I didn't realise at the time that I was allowing it. It was only on hindsight. So that was my introduction to some voodoo. I've not gone any further with it. All I've done is... find ways of resolving the hexing problem. So that was my interest, but I've not delved into it any deeper. But I do know that it has its effects where one doesn't understand what they're dealing with. And I think it can be quite dark. But most people, you'll find there are a shamanic background. To the voodoo, the witchcraft, there is a understanding the nature of the energies they're dealing with, plus the nature of the human beings to make their stuff work, which is, of course, very much shamanism. It's understanding nature and how you fit into nature and your nature and how you deal with your nature. And I think that's probably the same with the others. And there's bad in all of them.
And the interesting thing, I heard someone say this, I can't remember when or who it was, that the power of the negativity and the dark side is, it's almost like it's a quicker and dirtier ride because it's so powerful. I mean, those that are working... you know, with the darker energies or the unconscious energies, it always puts me in mind of, you know, the exchanges between Luke Skywalker and, you know, Darth Vader, when Darth Vader's talking about the power of, you know, the dark side, you know, come to the dark side, Luke. It's really powerful. And it's this thing about, that's why people get drawn into, I mean, you think of some of the things that Crowley did. I'm not saying that Crowley was necessarily a bad person, but it's this, the power of harnessing negative energy, isn't it?
Well, we can call it negative, but when people are going down that route, they don't see it as negative energy. No. The negativity, I think, can be judged or assessed when it's having a detrimental effect somewhere.
Yes.
And that's what we would call negative. But remember that if somebody's trying to make something go right, then they're justifying their plan of action to create that going right,
mm.
but the plan of action might be also causing harm somewhere.
Sure.
And we would call that negative, but not that person when they're in that situation.
So that's like a judgment I'm making. It's very subjective, isn't it? To say, well, negative energies.
a young man came to me at one time, and he had decided that he was really looking for his ideal female. And he
aren't
came.
We all? Well,
I'm not.
Some
I'm
of us, you will obviously.
I'm afraid I'm
you
not.
You haven't crossed to the dark side yet.
Oh, careful what you say there. The other side, shall we say?
The other side, yeah.
But he came across a book on magic. And there were some magic spells in the book, so-called magic. Yeah. I'm not sure if it was Crowley's. It
just
might have been somebody else's.
Energies.
Well, he came across the particular formula to bring to him his ideal woman.
Yeah.
And it happened about 3 weeks later.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah, it happened. And he was blown away by the effects of the magic formula he created, brought this gorgeous female in front of him. And for a very short time, they had a very powerful, energized relationship.
What's his number?
Well, that sent him on a route to find more magic and go down to find more magic. But in the meantime, he came to see me about this magic and ask him, but what happened with this female that he found himself with, that he was over the moon? It didn't take long before he found that there were inconsistencies in the cohesion, the matching up of the two characteristics. There were inconsistencies that very, very quickly turned into unpleasantness.
Right. Quite hostile then.
It became hostile very, fairly quickly.
Yeah.
So although she turned up in front of him, by doing this magic, it's very, very easy for it to go wrong, shall I say?
Yeah.
Because we honestly don't know what we're dealing with. And it's too huge and too big.
Yeah, and I was just going to add, when it comes to magic and manifestation and things like that, do we really know what we might know what we think that we need, but what we actually want to progress on our journey, that's a whole different area, isn't it? So I mean, this I assume it was a client that came to you, and on the surface at least I can relate to that. You know, if you're a single guy, you want a female, but it brought these other things to him which actually may have been more important to him at that point on his journey, and he wasn't accounting for that. Does that,
what do you mean by more important?
Well, not necessarily more important, but areas that he couldn't have thought of came to his awareness. So what you're saying is, okay, you can work things like magic and energy, but you know, buckle down, because you don't know what else is going to come along. And it's not going to necessarily come in the form that you expect it to.
It's the old adage again, be careful of what you wish for, because
you might just get it. Yeah.
And so he was wishing for something, but he got the other half as well.
Yeah, sure.
And there was another half to it that he didn't foresee because he didn't understand he needed to see a complete picture. What is the complete picture when you're wishing for things like that?
Sure.
What is it? It's literally an unknown quantity.
That's a difficult question.
And you will get the unknown quantity.
Sure.
It's not the first time I've heard this story of somebody doing something with the Wicca, which is a modern take on witchcraft, did also the same as the female who did it to bring to her ideal male.
Mm.
And for the first few weeks, they seem like an ideal couple, and then
the skeletons.
And then things came in, and it went very sour in the end. So anyway, with a young man, I did take him into the world of shamanism, and told him that this is the real magic, not the contrived magic.
This is the organic magic.
Well, yes, it's about understanding his nature, himself, and his life. We went through sorting, going through all that. I took him out into the New Forest and got him to touch nature and sense nature and get in touch. And I think suddenly we saw through the, close to us through the trees, a deer, a beautiful deer, just suddenly there, daytime, very unusual, suddenly there, and we were just there holding our breath and didn't dare breathe while it was just plodding, and it was very close to us, so that was quite magical. But he went on to have a synchronistic experience with a new girlfriend that would blow your mind.
Wow.
And it was all related to numbers.
Right.
He experienced throughout the whole of one day this series of numbers that came about in a coincidental way, that he came to me very excited and said, "Oh my God, how did that happen? How did that happen? That is impossible. It's absolutely impossible." But all of these numbers and the timing of everything was absolutely amazing. I said, "Now you're experiencing proper magic." And it was because he started to shift in his perception of himself and his life and his background and his baggage and open up. And it opened it up to a more higher connection, which sent him on to another stage of his life, and without trying to manipulate, it was the good old synchronicities that took place following that.
So
for me, there's two types of magic here. There's the manipulation and there's the connecting with source.
Yeah. That's a great analysis.
Oh, actually, that's going to be the title of my book that will never get written. Connecting with Source. I think that's probably the title of a lot of books, actually.
Not talking about cheese sauce, though, are we? We're talking about the divine here.
Oh, how could you?
A cheesy joke.
How could you? Okay. Well, I was, so that's where I was going to bring shamanism in as the difference between the two. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, thank you. I believe you've got another couple of areas to touch upon in terms of the paranormal, one of which is the idea of nature spirits. Which isn't traditionally thought of as, you know, in the realm of ghosts and entities, but of course it's an otherworldly entity. It's another word, you know, it's part of the same energetic dimension, I would suggest. So,
well, I believe that there are it's taken me years to come to all of this. You realize this, don't you? From when I was a child and opening up psychically, or recognizing psychic, and then opening up to other realities. As the years have gone on, it's stage by stage by stage, the same as somebody can go, as we've just been talking about, down the negative route, as we would call negative, stage by stage, not really jumping into being dark and threatening. For all of us, it's stages of learning and experience. So the stages I've been through, I've got to what I believe now is a truth, that there are different dimensions. Within those dimensions are different existences that live, intelligences that live. So I believe there's, from the very tall, which I have seen anyway, elven people, just like you would walk out of Lord of the Rings, I have to say. Sorry, but I've seen them.
Entities.
And somebody saw them when I saw them. There was absolute proof there.
Sure.
Absolute proof that they existed and that I was communicating with them.
Yeah.
There are also very tall fairies that I'm told by an expert of lady who's now passed, that they are as tall as houses. So that's a whole nation of as you would say, fairies or maybe even elves, elven people. But there are also, shall we say, like sprites.
Spriggans and pixies.
Well, I suppose we... But I think that some of these are the same name for one type of being. But there are quite a few of them, right down to small. There are even... I have also seen, I'm going to sound
Stop
so
bragging.
Crazy, I know, but I actually saw one day for a matter of 20 minutes, I think it was. The tiny plant fairies.
Right.
that look after the plants.
Wow.
And I they did have gorgeous little wings. And they were little people. They were, and they were taking care of the plants of where I was sitting by. Gosh. And it didn't dawn on me while I was sat there in a daydream, just watching them, thinking, "Oh, they really do exist." Then, and then thinking, "Oh, I actually need to pop in. I'm going to go indoors and get this was the morning. Go and get another cup of coffee." and I got in and got my cup of coffee and suddenly realised what I'd seen.
Sure.
And went back out there and tried really hard to see it again, and I couldn't see it again.
Sure.
They really do exist, and it so really happens, but you need your brain shifting a bit to be able to see them or contact
them. Can I just check, do they act as like a guardian, or are they there to sort of protect the interests of the land? And
yes and yes.
Yes and yes. Good answers. That was a very simple question.
There are all types there. Mm. If you look around the world and see just human beings, which is one type of being, if you look around and see the animals, there's other types of beings.
Mm.
I think there's different animals on different dimensions, different levels, because I think we have like the primal, like the alligators and the crocodiles and the snakes, for instance. Terrestrial,
yeah.
And then it goes on to the birds, the winged people, the feathered people. Sorry, that's very shamanic.
It is, isn't it?
Beings. And I think they're different levels of evolution. Mm. And then you've got the mammals.
Mm.
And then you've got us that seems to be, we are manimal animals. Whether we're clever or more intelligent than other mammals is debatable. but we have produced the most amazing buildings throughout the world. For good or for ill, we have produced these amazing things. So I think we're slightly apart species. I think we're separating species from the rest of the mammals. I think we're moving away from them, and I think we're evolving and going through the evolution process. I think that there are those that are dimensional, but I also think that there are other things that are dimensional. So if there's all types around the earth of all of these types that you can see and touch because they're in the physical world, that's exactly the same as in the other dimensions, where they're all types.
So is it almost all like types. Different dimensions have different densities?
I think it's possible, yes. Mm. I do think it's possible. But I think that's why we see different hauntings as well.
Yeah.
Different entities that have been human beings and moved on.
Mm.
But also there are other entities that we would call hauntings that I believe that haven't been human beings. I think they've come from another dimension.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And I think they tend to be the more scary ones if you know what you're looking at. I think a lot of people would find any type of haunting very scary, but sometimes they're not scary. They're just people that have not got their bodies anymore, but they're still very aware of who they are and trying to deal with the situation they've got into. Mm. They've got into the situation where they don't know how to get to the light.
Mm.
And there are difficulties for them going on and they need help.
So this idea of transition, you know, from the living realm, the physical realm, to the afterlife. Is that spoken of in the Tibetan Book of the Dead?
Yes, but I think there's also the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Definitely the Tibetan Book of the Dead is very well known for this delivery. But can I just also mention the Celtic Book of the Dead is Caitlin Matthews.
Yeah.
Which is, so these are the different areas of the world that there are these teachings.
Mm.
And the Books of the Dead sound spooky to the uninitiated.
Sure.
But what they are is teachings for how when your spirit leaves your body, and then you need to go across this very difficult space to get to the light.
Mm.
For some people, they can be quite a natural process, but not for everybody.
Mm.
And so the ancient traditions used to build in teachings and awareness of this transition place.
Mm.
For instance, if you take what we know of Egyptian archaeology,
and hieroglyphs.
Well, the archaeology,
yeah.
To leave things for people to take on their journey.
Mm.
And it, For instance, remember the old coins that would be placed on the eyes of a recently deceased?
Yeah.
And what was it for, the coins?
I have no idea.
To pay the ferryman.
Oh, right.
The ferryman takes you over the River Styx, which is that spiritual space, so that you go over safely.
So there's a divide you need to cross.
Over the divide safely. There's lots of information from the past to help. Now, if you take all the hauntings that we have, there are people that are stuck.
Yeah.
Well, our societies aren't teaching the passage anymore.
Yeah.
The books of the dead were meant to be teachings of how you can get stuck. And very often the getting stuck is to do with your own emotional baggage.
Mm.
Mm. Hence the work that we do, we in the esoteric area are helping people deal with their baggage before they get to that point, so that it's an easier transition.
So this runs counter to the some views that are held in the spiritual realm, that when we die our spirit just, you know, is elevated and we merge back with God or the divine or whatever you want to call that force. What you're alluding to, as I see it, is actually when you die, your development, you don't get then fast-tracked. Wherever you're at when you die, or wherever your consciousness is at and your baggage and your psychological issues, they don't suddenly disappear. So say someone is an angry, resentful person, very strongly angry and resentful, and they die in that state. That's going to affect their progression, is that right, through the spirit world?
Yes, but the
obviously whatever, it's not that simple.
Well, whatever the anger is what they will stay attached to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you are keeping it within you.
Mm.
So if you're keeping it within you and you're angry about something around you in your everyday life before you pass,
yeah,
you will still be, you'll be hanging there with it.
It's metaphysics.
Yes, it is metaphysics. Absolutely. Yeah. You're like magneted. I always
magnetized
to it. Yeah. Because you're doing that within your energy system. Mm. That's what you're doing. Mm. In simple terms, that's what happened. Have I spoken about being taken over by the old man that didn't want to leave his flat? Instead of running a meditation group that I was supposed to have been at this flat with a small group of people a few years ago, I found myself getting taken over. And I had to sort of
get... So it was quite a physical...
Oh, totally physical, being shut down, being taken over. And at first I didn't get what was happening. And then when I did, I sort of pushed him out, shall I say.
Sure.
Because I was therefore at that moment in a zone, shall I say, where my brain had changed its pattern of working.
Mm.
I actually saw the man.
Mm.
And yet I knew other people couldn't see him,
as
strange as it seems. I knew people couldn't see him, but I knew I could see him. And he was there. That moment when I pushed him off of me, he was actually really scared.
Yeah.
But he just said, sorry, I just don't like people being in my house, in my flat.
Simple as that.
I want you all to go away. And I had to explain to him it wasn't his anymore, that he'd moved to another stage.
Sure.
And I explained to him that he had to move on to the light. And we know it's a glow. Everybody know it. There's a glow, which usually people belonging to you have already gone before you, come out of it to meet you or friends or helpful people.
That's quite a responsibility to have. I'm thinking of myself being in that position, having this conversation. That's quite a responsibility, isn't it?
Which part do you mean?
Well, from you saying to this, how should we say, this, you know, spirit, you know, just laying out the simple facts.
It's not always easy to discuss with the spirits about going, because you can't force anybody to do anything.
You can't break their free will.
Whether they're in body or they're not in body, it makes very little difference.
Mm.
And they, yes, that's right, they still have free will. And some people are too frightened and they want to hang on to what they knew rather than go anywhere else. It's very it's a but it is a play, time of persuasion and encouragement and love and caring to help them to move through. So I always think as a kind act rather than a responsibility. But you're right in as much as that they're you ha you can't take it for granted that people are just going to go because you just think they should.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I can sit down and do this and tell them to go. You can sit down and tell them, but they'll still make up their own mind. So the responsibility is in how you discuss the matter with the person. But I always see it as a kindness rather than a responsibility. I think, people need it.
Might be
So.
interesting at this point just to add to our listeners. In a past episode of Discerning Consciousness, which you were a guest on, and Mike, called Deaf and Beyond,
Oh
we
yes,
discussed
yes.
some of the issues,
Yes.
around deaf. So
Yeah.
if you're interested in any of those kinds of issues, then go and check out that episode called Deaf and Beyond. It was
Yes.
a very
Yeah.
interesting recording,
We
wasn't it?
went quite a lot of depth
We
on it, didn't
did.
we? So for people interested, they could
So
really
we're coming
enjoy
up
it.
to the hour mark here at Discerning Consciousness on this episode about paranormal heather. So I think we'll look to round things up. So have you got anything else you'd like to share with myself and on the listeners? Anything that's gnawing away at you on this issue of paranormal?
You did mention a little earlier the subject of are there such things as guardians within the other realms like fairies or elves or
Yeah,
what
when
have
we're talking about the
or
nature spirits,
nature
yeah, thank
spirits?
you for returning to that.
Yeah, no, I suddenly realized I hadn't completed that discussion. There are always guardian spirits looking after different parts of land. Therefore, when we build a house, there is also a guardian spirit in the house. You will get that in ancient times. I believe that the guardian spirit, the main guardian spirit of a house, was the hob, or known as hob.
I
And
wonder if
this is
that's where
where we.
Hobbit comes from.
It is possible,
It is. It
actually.
must
It
be,
is
yeah.
possible. Yeah, so you will get. There are guardians, and there are guardians of land. They're all different types. And it's not a bad thing if you take responsibility by seeing if you can communicate with the guardian of your garden. Or the guardian of your house, or the guardian of a field or a woodland. Where are the guardians? And communicate with them and allow your imagination to tell you, knowing that the imagination is a good thing in these matters. Fantasy could be the problem, but imagination is what you need.
That sounds like a line from a book as well, Heather.
Oh, that's the title of my
Is
second
that oh, oh it's
book,
not a line
which will never get
it's not a line
written.
in the source book then.
Source book. No, it's not the cookbook at all.
Okay. So today, Heather, we've covered quite a broad area with regards to the paranormal, but obviously we haven't gone into specifics. So I was wondering, would you if you were kind enough, would you come back on a future episode of Discerning Consciousness, and maybe we could look at some of those areas in greater detail? Is that something you'd be happy to do?
That'd be great fun.
Yeah,
Great fun
thank
to do
you.
that.
As I'm
Thank you for
sure
your
our
invite.
listeners would enjoy that too, because I do know, obviously, from our conversations offline, that you have much more sort of in-depth area knowledge on these specific areas. But obviously, for the sake of a recording, we've had to make it quite general. But
Yes, yeah, we will do. That would be terrific fun to do that. I would like to do that with
okay, well, if it's
you.
okay with you, just as we're rounding up now, I'll just share your contact details again, if that's okay. So your website, if people want to contact you, is www.heatherheaton.org, and that's HEATHER, HEATON. And on Facebook, your business page is Spiritual Shamanka, and I believe that's Shamanka, is that correct?
Yes.
And people can contact you and ask you any questions about what we've spoken about today or on previous episodes, and anything to do with any of the teachings that you carry out as well, and yes, consultancies that you...
Always interested to answer queries.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It's been a delight to have you on today, Heather. I hope our listeners have enjoyed listening to you as much as I have, sharing your wonderful knowledge on a discerning consciousness.
Thank you.
So we're signing off now. Hope to have you on board again soon. Cheerio for now.
Mars won't eat our bars where the TV's on. Now he's gone back up to space where he would have a hassle with the human race. Sang hip-hop and don't stop, just blast off. Sure shot, cause the man from Mars stop eating cars and eating bars. And